This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, I'm Ezra Zaid. It's that time for Trita Trita Rock and Roll. And this time, we have a band for you that were one of the first few bands, if not the defining band, that started the conversation about this genre of music that we call heavy metal. Of course, I'm speaking about Black Sabbath. So when you look into the history books of rock music, and certainly once we leave the 60s, somewhere between 1966 and 1971, you undoubtedly will get names and bands that created the awareness of this term heavy metal, or even that sound. So bands like Blue Cheer, Deep Purple, Jimi Hendrix, Cream, Led Zeppelin, just to name a few. But when it comes to Black Sabbath, this band from Birmingham in the UK, those initial riffs, that heavy melodic sound, made it pretty unanimous as to what that heavy sound was. Bands and metal gods that would later make a career of their own in different subgenres of metal point back to Black Sabbath. This includes bands like Cannibal Corpse.
Every metal band owes a debt musically to Black Sabbath. They were the original.
Lamb of God.
First metal band ever, Black Sabbath.
As well as Rob Zombie of White Zombie.
Every cool riff has already been written by Black Sabbath. Anything anyone else does is just basically ripping it off. You're either playing it slightly different or backwards or faster or slow, but they did everything already.
So we'll be exploring what was it about them that made them a little bit different than those other bands in that era. But before that, who comprises Black Sabbath? They go through a few personnel changes over the years, but here are the four original members. There's Bill Ward on drums. There's Geezer Butler on bass. The legendary Tony Iommi on guitars. And of course, Ozzy Osbourne. Your love for me has just got to be real. Before you know the way I'm going to feel, I'm going to feel, I'm going to feel. Now, there are of course a generation of Ozzy fans who were introduced to the frontman not through Black Sabbath or his music, but through MTV's hit reality TV series Meet the Osbournes. This was in 2002. Crazy. Hey,
but that's how it goes. I don't know what planet I'm on. I feel like I've been fired out of a cannon on Monday. I ain't landed yet.
She's my whole world. She's the best lover I've ever had. The best friend I've ever had. The worst friend I've ever had. It's like bread and butter.
Sharon! So for the many millennials who became aware of Black Sabbath via Ozzy Osbourne or through MTV, ironically of all places, previous generations would recall a famous tale about the band's guitarist, Tony Iommi. The story of how Iommi lost his fingers. The story about how Iommi, arguably the pioneer at making heavy metal riffs, almost gave up music entirely. So here's how it went. The story goes about one day how Iommi was at work.
I used to do electric welding, arc welding. The place where I worked was a sheet metal work factory, and they used to cut the metal and send it to me to weld.
So one day, and this is in 1965, the person who's supposed to be doing the cutting portion of the job doesn't show up to work. So they ask Ayomi to do it instead. So basically, the employers didn't want Ayomi to be twiddling his thumbs and not doing any work. He doesn't really know how, but he learns on the job.
So they start doing it, and this thing just come down on my hand, and it trapped my hand. And your reaction to pull your hand back, I just pulled the ends off, and that was that.
Now, the irony of the whole thing is, of course, if Ayomi had it his own way, the whole incident would have never even happened.
Strangely enough, I was going to leave that job the next day. Well, on that day, as a matter of fact, I wasn't going to go in on the afternoon. I went back home, I said to my mother, I said, I'm not going in this afternoon. And she went, you go in, you go to work, you go to work. So I went in, and that's what happened.
And this accident, understandably, left a mark on Ayomi. He almost decided to give up music completely. But after some persuasion, interestingly from his factory manager, maybe out of guilt, Ayomi came up with an idea. So his factory manager was telling Ayomi to maybe not give up so quickly. He pointed Ayomi to listen to a musician by the name of Django Reinhardt, a jazz guitarist, who also, incidentally, lost two fingers.
After you've gone and left me crying, after you've gone, there's no denying. You seem blue, you feel sad, Mr.
Reinhardt would play solos like this with only three fingers. Listening to Reinhardt inspired Ayomi to figure out how to make do. After all, Reinhardt injured his hand in a fire and had to reinvent his own playing style. So with that...
So I went ahead and tried to make myself something, and I did. I made some tips out of a squeezy bottle. I melted it down into a ball, and little ball like that. And then I got a hot old soldering iron and pushed it through. And then I made it fix onto my fingers, and I sat there all night then rubbing it down so it would shape like a finger. And then I had to put a piece of leather on so to grip the strings, because otherwise, you know, it'd just slip off. And it was just something I developed over that period, and then it enabled me to be able to play.
And Ayomi doesn't just play. He reinvents a style that creates this heavy sound. He began using lighter strings, detuning his guitar to different drop tunings, just so he could get a better grip on the strings. He went on to say, quote, "It made me invent a new sound and a different sort of music. It turned out to be a good thing off a bad thing," end of quote. This story laid the foundations for those big, bad, evil, iconic Sabbath riffs. And at the same time, you get Paranoid by Black Sabbath. It's Treat or Treat to Rock and Roll, BFM 89.9. It's Treat or Treat to Rock and Roll, I'm Ezra Zide, and we're exploring Black Sabbath. Here's a quick story about one of their iconic songs, War Pigs. But before we play the track, to gain a sense of what Black Sabbath were about at this time, it revolved around playing gigs, getting in some studio time, get to a stage, soundcheck, perform live, and then travel to the next gig. And like most British bands trying to build a name, they would travel to Germany, specifically though, to perform at the Star Club. This is in Hamburg, and that was a big deal at the time. Geezer Butler and Tony Iommi recount that experience.
Well, the Star Club was famous because of the Beatles. So when we got the opportunity to play at the Star Club, we went, yeah, the Star Club, fantastic. And of course, the reality was a lot different. And we got there and there's like about three people in the audience.
One of them being probably a nutcase and one a prostitute, you know. And could we start at 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
And here's what's interesting. Because these gigs were about 45 minutes or so in length, they couldn't rely on just playing their repertoire. It just wouldn't last. They would, in fact, have to improvise, and so they would.
And we only had like 8 songs at the time, so we'd stretch each song out for 45 minutes. And because we were jamming so much, that's where we wrote practically all the first album and some of the second album.
Collectively, they would play off each other. And as a band that's in tune with each other's abilities, they were actually just stretching out one of their songs. until something, well, new happened.
During the song Warning, we used to jam that out, and that particular night, we were jamming it out, and Tony just went, da-dan. I mean, well, that's good.
Originally, that was going to be called War Piggers. Something to do with black magic, because we all started reading Dennis Wheatley books, you know.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses.
Butler, who's on bass, who also wrote the lyrics, explains how, quote, it wasn't about politics or government or anything, it was about evil, end of quote. And on this particular point,
I wanted to write a song called Wallpigis, you know, the satanic version of Christmas. Write it about that Satan isn't a spiritual thing, it's warmongers. That's who the real Satanists are, all these people that are running the banks and the world and trying to get the working class to fight the wars for them. We sent it off to the record company. No, we're not going to call it that, too satanic. So I changed it to War Pigs.
And it didn't matter whether the lyrics were about war, power, or politics, or about the devil himself. This song, War Pigs, would be one of their most enduring compositions. And on the off chance you haven't heard this epic beast, here it is, on Cheetah Cheetah Rock and Roll, War Pigs by Black Sabbath, BFM 89.9. Good evening, I'm Ezra Zayed, and on Cheetah Cheetah Rock and Roll thus far, we've been looking at the music and legacy of Black Sabbath. The four original members of Tony Iommi, Ozzy Osbourne, Geezer Butler, and Bill Ward made a total of 8 albums. This is from 1970 right up till Osbourne leaves the band in 1979. From there, Black Sabbath soldiers on through a whole lot of albums and a high number of personnel changes over the next 3 decades. Vocalists came and went, like Ronnie James Dio, Ian Gillan, Tony Martin, but also to the change of drummers like Vinnie Appice and Brad Wilk. That's right, formerly of Rage Against the Machine. So the story we have right now is what led to the original band's breakup. By 1975, their albums are reaching gold and platinum status. They're on the road constantly. At one point, without a break in 3 years, their presence in America, especially, made them a household name, with both critics and fans. There would be these appearances at festivals and tours alongside bands like Kiss and Deep Purple. And actually, according to Osbourne, back in those days, tours and festivals were way more diverse.
Like in the old days in the 70s, you'd get bands like the Eagles, Yes, and Sabbath doing the same gig, you know. Or you'd get we opened up for James Taylor one time, you know. But you see, that's the whole thing in the old. Nowadays, it's like these metal packages, these rap packages, these alternative packages. It's too much. It's and I'm called heavy metal, but and in its day, it went from Poison, Bon Jovi, Aerosmith, Ozzy, Motorhead, Metallica. We were all called heavy metal. Now, we're nothing like each other whatsoever, you know, musically. And but because we're branded as heavy metal and we've got tattoos, it's music is music. You either like a certain form of music or you don't.
But as the incessant touring continues, so did the pressures of delivering on a new album. For the 4 kids from Birmingham, the UK, making good music at this point just wasn't as simple a process. Success had ultimately changed the dynamics of their relationships.
The early part of the success is so much fun, because the first 2 Sabbath albums were great fun because it was all new. It was all new, and we all had such a laugh, man. You know, and then all of a sudden it becomes deadly serious, and people start telling you what you should and shouldn't be doing, and what. And it's always the big. I mean, and if anyone is listening to this, you know, if you're new, you crack the egg, man. You enjoy those first few years of them because, you know, you never recapture them again. You know, I've been very lucky, man.
And there were the drugs. There was plenty of it. But it affected each member differently, some more than others. That is at least Iommi's perspective on how things started to go downhill.
But Ozzy got to a stage where he wasn't into it anymore, and he was doing too much of everything. And we all were doing stuff, but he was worse than what we were. He was a few stages ahead of us. I think he'd done a lot of damage. Initially, we thought it was great, and we thought it was helping us create. But at the end of the day, when it came to a point where we had to replace Ozzy,
it had gotten to a stage where they were no longer compatible as a band. And Osborne, to his credit, doesn't deny that fact. But what is interesting is that from his view, there were slightly different reasons behind the breakup.
What happened with me and Black Sabbath was it became, at the beginning we all had a purpose, but as it went along, that inevitable thing stepped in called ego. And to get four guys to come up with the same result at the end of the day was near on impossible, because not saying I was better than them, not saying they were better than me, but the fact is that success does change you. I mean, when you're hungry, you all have one goal to have, and that is to get successful. Now, when you get successful, it affects various... I mean, it affected me. I didn't give a shit. I was full of cocaine and all the rest of the crap that I used to do, you know? So, I mean, that stuff makes you talk total horse crap, you know? The amount of... there shouldn't be a problem in the world, because I think we solved them all in a bathroom of a hotel with a bag of that white powder, you know? What happened was... I was getting musically frustrated because, you know, there's one of the songs that I'm just a backstreet kid, one that we wrote. And there's a line that I wrote on that. It says, rock and roll is paying my lawyer's bills or something like that. But we were working on the road to pay lawyer's fees to keep the lawsuit going against the manager that was ripping us off. And I just said, hey, man, well, I didn't get involved in this to become a damn lawyer. I don't know the first I don't understand the business side of it. I don't want to. I don't. No, he said, now it seems my music's paying off my tax demands. That's the line. And we'd never paid tax. So we had to pay tax and all this and whatever. I said to the band one day, I said, you know, I want to do a solo album. And they said, well, Tony said to me, well, we're a band. I said, yeah, but I'd like to do something on my own, you know. And you know, it's all for one and one for all us, you know, the scene, you know. But I was still wanted to do something. I wanted to do something aside from Sabbath. Not saying that I was any better than Sabbath, because Sabbath, in my opinion, from 1968 till after I left with the two Dio albums involved, it was one of the greatest bands I ever worked with. But I just had this thing that I had to vent my thing and do something what I wanted to do, you know? So I said to Tony, and he says, well, if you've got any ideas, you should put them to the band, because we're a band, you know? It'd be great if I come up with something and didn't give it to you guys. And then I said, oh, fair enough, then okay. What do you think about this? Don't like it. What do you think about this? Don't like it. What do you think about this? Don't like it. What do you think about this? And so on. And I didn't like anything. So here am I. I'm still frustrated. I don't like what I've done. They said, tell me that if I've got any ideas, you should give to the band. I've given them to the band. They don't like it, so I'm still in the same hole. But now I'm more frustrated because I've got this desire to do a solo album. And so I left. I just thought, this is crap, you know. So, I mean, that wasn't the reason why I left. It was because that we would write a song, book a studio, and try and finish the album in a studio, which is just total crap to me, you know. I don't like being in a studio. I mean, everyone was... I mean, I got the rap of being stoned and drunk all the time. You know, I wasn't the only one, man. I mean, we were all in a bad way, man, with drugs and alcohol. A very, very bad way.
Times have changed and times are strange. Here I come, but I ain't the same. Mama, I'm coming home. Time's gone by, it seems to be. You could have been a better friend to me. Mama, I'm coming home.
On the 27th of April 1979, Osborne was asked to leave the band. Iommi remembers how difficult that was.
We had to fire him, which was awful.
Did you do it face to face?
Well, actually, the drummer did it. He told him. We were going to tell him altogether, but Bill stepped in and told him without us. And it was a terrible thing to do.
I could be right, I could be wrong. It hurts so bad, it's been so long. Mama, I'm coming home.
But unlike most rock and roll stories, this band, Black Sabbath, they got a second chance at retelling its story.
So, and I think a lot of the things about Ozzy and myself not getting on got blown out of proportion, really, quite honestly, because we always, you know, we're certainly closer than we've ever been now.
And that's the greatest thing about this reunion, because I've been able to bury that hatchet.
'Cause mama, mama.
Gotta be a reunion somewhere in the mix. Stay tuned after this for more Cheater Cheater Rock and Roll featuring Black Sabbath, BFM 89.9. It's Cheater Cheater Rock and Roll featuring Black Sabbath. I'm Ezra Zayd. I hinted earlier about reunions. Black Sabbath did reunite, but to a certain extent. It's never been cut and dry with the four original members. Nothing really changed, disagreements still exist. But there were a number of reunion gigs in 1999 with all four original members. It should also be said that there have since been attempts at reunions that didn't quite work out as well. For example, with the exception of drummer Bill Ward, the remaining three members went on to record 13, a new album that was released in 2013, and it was then followed by a tour. But since the breakup in 1979, there was one occasion which brought all four original members together.
Good evening.
Perhaps it was for the honour, but also for that hint of nostalgia. It took place at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2006, and here's Brian May of Queen with a few kind words.
You might have ambled into a pub or a club and seen the Rockin' Chevrolets or The Rest or Rare Breed. These groups contain various combinations of players, including William Ward, John Osborne, Anthony Iommi, and Terence Butler. All young kids playing on a semi-pro basis, picking up maybe a fiver a night for their efforts. Somewhere along the line, they all decided to give up their day jobs and pitch into the great rock world full-time. Somewhere in 1969, this group of young lads had a vision of what their band would one day symbolise to millions of kids around the world. They named themselves a symbol of unorthodoxy, anger, mystery, and raw power. They called themselves Black Sabbath. Sabbath history is peppered with drama and constant change. Ozzy left the group, often, for periods in which he created brilliant solo work with his Blizzard of Oz alongside people like Randy Rose and others. Bill Ward retired at times to pursue his private life. Geezer Butler at times resigned to write and produce independently. And all the while, Tony Iommi kept the Black Sabbath ethos intact, enlisting many a now legendary player to keep the flame burning, such names as Ronnie James Dio, Tony Martin, Glenn Hughes, Cozy Powell, Eric Singer, Neil Murray, Ian Gillan. All these great artists have lent something to the monolith which is Black Sabbath. But whenever the planets are suitably aligned, the original Black Sabbath lineup storms back together and the earth truly moves, as it's about to do tonight. Folks, these men invented heavy metal. Together or apart, for more than 40 years, they've pursued it without compromise. Black Sabbath have struck more unforgettable riffs into the hearts of man than any group on the planet. They are the model, the living primal seed, and a whole genre of young rock groups today acknowledge their debt and pay their respects. This monumental rock group of the people are more than worthy of an induction into any Hall of Fame. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure and an honor for me to recognize on this day Black Sabbath.
Hope you enjoyed the show. If you missed any part of this program, you can of course head to www.bfm.my to download the podcast. Stay tuned for BFM Bootlegs Black Sabbath after the 8 o'clock news tonight for a whole hour of live tracks from their concerts. This is Treat or Treat or Rock and Roll, and we're ending with Sabra Kadabra. Black Sabbath, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.